Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we introduce you to Mike Morgan, the president and CEO of Northwestern Golf. So stay tuned to get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along. Now, we enjoyed our time in Orlando at the PGA Merchandise Show like we always do. And over the last number of weeks, we've brought new product to the show and told you about some things. But there was one thing that happened in Orlando on the show floor which took me aback. And I couldn't believe it. I thought it was a mirage because on the last day, I turned the corner and there was a booth that said Northwestern on it. It didn't say Northwestern University. It didn't say Northwestern over here. It said Northwestern Golf. And I said, that can't be because Northwestern's been gone for years. I mean, they started the company back in 1929 and it went away. But supposedly it has come back like the Phoenix. It is back. It has risen from the ether dust that is out there for whatever that is, do scientists know whatever. And it is here again. I can't believe it. I went so back into our golf museum and actually grabbed the Northwestern 3-wood. I have a set of Northwestern clubs. My first set ever came with the plaid bag as well, which I still have. I don't touch it too much so it doesn't fall apart. But Northwestern as a golf company apparently is back. How do I know? Because the president and CEO has now been tricked to come on this show. Mike Morgan, a longtime golf industry veteran, has decided no, 3 decades plus at Titleist wasn't enough. No, I did some time at McGregor and then I moved on and I've come through my life and I was ready to retire, but no, I wasn't. I decided I'm going to become the head guy, president and CEO with a guy named Tony to start this Northwestern thing all over again. I don't know what he's thinking. I don't know, but he's going to tell you himself as we welcome Mike Morgan to Tee It Up with Keith Jones.
Thank you, Keith. It's my pleasure to be here and represent Northwestern Golf, and I'm excited to be a part of Tee It Up. It's a great show, and I'm just a big fan, so happy to do this.
Well, thank you. We have been around for a little while. We started back in 1998 for those playing along at home, and we've been fortunate to have the greats, the industry greats specifically in this case, on the show, like Ely Callaway and Gary Adams, who started TaylorMade, and of course Barney Adams, who's not related to Gary, but Barney did his own thing, and Jesse Ortiz, and a bunch of innovators in the golf industry. But here we are. It's like what is old is new again, and this is a great example, Mike, because a lot of people of a certain age remember Northwestern first and foremost as an early set that they had as they progressed through the game of golf. The younger generation has probably never heard of Northwestern as a golf company. And here you say, oh, let's reintroduce it to people. And oh, by the way, the colors that I saw at the booth were not red, white, and blue like I was expecting. So from that standpoint, so what in the world was Mike Morgan thinking when he says, hey, let's bring this company to life again?
That's a great question, Keith. Thanks for teeing it up for me. Sorry. So what we looked at was, and I have a partner, Joe Altamonte. He came from a prior generation of companies himself, two companies, one called Pal Joey, the other one Dynacraft. And he was, and his dad was a part of the industry for a long time. So Joe had a pedigree in golf, and his pedigree is on the side of sourcing and manufacturing. Mine was more on the sales marketing side. So that's how we kind of got together. We knew each other from time together in the industry, but we thought, man, would it be pretty cool to bring back a company, but what's the niche? And I said, there is no niche. I said, we'd have to find it. He said, find it. So we spent about 3 months, came back and said, look, golf is booming. you know, this COVID situation, Top Golf is coming on the scene. There's just a lot of cool things happening. And in the last year, we've seen the demographics of younger golfers being the most played rounds of golf, 18 to 35. That's never happened in the history of golf. So we've had in the past, usually it's the 40 to 75-year-old demographic that leads the rounds. So things are changing, lots of new blood coming into the game. And as I looked at it, I came from a bubble, quite frankly. I love Titleist, and I thank the Lord I got to be with them as many years as I did, and I have a great spot in my heart for Titleist. But I lived in a bubble because all I understood was the top 20% of the marketplace. I didn't understand the lower tier of 80%ers where the 20% don't mind spending $500+ for a driver or $1,000 for a set of irons. But my gosh, I mean, there's just so much opportunity out there at the lower price points, but I wasn't a part of it. So as I stepped away from Titleist and looked at the opportunity, it became apparent that it was a space that was open, that was glaring. And it was that people that come into the game from COVID or come out of Top Golf, and I'll use Top Golf as an example. A player that goes to Top Golf, plays there, loves it. This is, I think I want to take this game to the golf course. Then you know what? It's a little disappointing sometimes when they realize that it's a pretty expensive game. And for years it was kind of considered the rich person's game, and then it became affordable. And then, you know, Tiger kind of came in and made it kind of really hot again. It was kind of affordable. And then now all of a sudden it just seems like everything's tapering to another rich person's type game. So we looked at it and said, we want to keep this Top Golf golfer who comes out and goes, guess what? I mean, I like this game, but I looked at it and it's going to cost me $3,000 for a set of golf clubs. It's $25,000 for a membership at a club. It's $150 greens fee. I just can't do all this. If this is what it's going to be like, I'll just go buy a kayak and I'll head to the river and I'll have my outdoors time that way. And I just looked at it with Joe and I said, it's the entry level. No one's catering to the entry level. There's a company that was there. They kind of vacated that space. Everyone's kind of moved up. And we looked at it and said, that's where we should be. And Northwestern was in that category, Keith, back in its heyday. And it just flourished. And it catered to those types of golfers, which were entry-level players or people that just said, hey, look, I don't spend that much money. And that's where we saw the opportunity. That's how Northwestern came back.
It was started in 1929 by an Italian immigrant named Nat Rosasco.
Correct.
In 1929. And I'll let you tell more history because you obviously better know it better than me. But he died in 1961, and his son, Nat the Second, took it over. And then
Correct.
it eventually ended up going away. So take people through a bit of the history of why it was such a popular club company, making millions of clubs a year, to then being an afterthought and being totally gone.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. The company started in 29. It struggled. It started in the basement of Nat Rosasco. Then his brother came on. They stepped away, got out of the garage, started a little business. It did okay. Never was really too strong. Got a little bit bigger. Got a little bit of notoriety. The biggest break for Northwestern, believe this or not, was World War II. And a contract that they had and actually was able to create with the military, the U.S. military. The military approached Northwestern as a price point product line in golf and said, we want to be able to deliver golf clubs to our soldiers around the world. We want them to have some kind of peace of mind on some time away from the battlefields or just time away from home. We want to take their minds off of that. We think golf would be good. We want to expand golf into the military. So that's really the big break that Northwestern received in the late 40s, early 50s, was becoming the preferred brand of the military. It helped them to ramp up their facility to get to another building, and all of a sudden their business started to take off, and then people started to come back from the war and said, gosh, this is great. I love golf. And you know, Northwestern was the company that provided golf clubs for us through the military, and things kind of took off from there. they picked up a presence on the PGA Tour in the 50s, and then the brand started expanding. And then they just looked at it and said, where do we go? Do we go to the masses or the classes? Where do we see our business opportunity? And quite frankly, it was just, we need to go to the masses, and just focus on the golfers that are the working people of the United States. And so they've started marketing their golf clubs in places where people purchased product that worked in the working class. And it was the Sears catalog. It was the JCPenney catalog. It was the Wilco catalog, like we talked about earlier. It was just anywhere that the masses bought product, that's where they were. Now, they had a presence on tour, and it was out there, but people didn't look at it as that's the premier brand. It's the brand that, my gosh, we can afford to play. So that's really where it started. As time went on and the family continued it, it flourished, quite frankly, through the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. It was the number one golf club brand in terms of total golf clubs being sold. At one time, I've been told this, I don't see any documentation in historical documents that tell me this, but I heard that they built and shipped over 1 million golf clubs a month during the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. And that would dwarf a major OEM today. Now, not the size of the company, but just the number of golf clubs that they manufactured and shipped. So that was their niche. They stayed in that channel of, hey, this is our lane, this is where we do our best, and that's where we're going to stay. Then as we got into the 90s, the grandkids took over, and the grandkids said, well, I think it would be pretty cool if we started making better golf equipment, in the sense that better being more expensive. Not necessarily better quality, just more expensive. Maybe some more whistles and bells on it, things like that. Hire some more tour representation and take it to another level. And unfortunately, they got out of their lane. And when you start that pathway against major OEMs who are embedded in that category, you're fighting an uphill battle. And that's what they ran into. And by the year of 2005, they had run out of real estate in terms of market share and closed the doors.
So 20 years later, what do you have to give up to obtain the name Northwestern, which holds some value? I'm sure you've had conversations over the months of the ramp up before the relaunch of, why did you pick that name? Why didn't you pick a different name or make up your own name?
We looked at it. We felt like Northwestern had such a great history. They were so well known by so many people. And really, as Keith referenced earlier, it was, I believe you said it was your first set of golf clubs. It was my first set of golf clubs. So when I sat in meetings with, because this didn't come about just by accident. I mean, we've been working on this for a couple of years, but the initial concept, we took it to actually Carl Jr. at Carl's Golf and his staff, and just laid it out there and said, here's what we have. This is what we're thinking. We're thinking about bringing back this brand name. We bought it, and we also have First Flight, and we're thinking about basically bringing the both back. At least at this point, Northwestern is our primary. Having said that, the group in the room, which was made up of five buyers, Carl Jr. and then Joe and I, three of the buyers had never heard of Northwestern. They said, why did you pick Northwestern? Why didn't you pick a name that's new? And why didn't you just pick? I said, what would you have picked? Well, I don't know. I don't know. And I said, we didn't know either. We could hire a marketing company to do it, which we did. But we were entrenched in Northwestern for one reason. It had such a legacy, and quite frankly, if you look at it, you go, I own 40% equity in a name. 40% of the golfers that are out there right now remember Northwestern. We did a study on it. The grandfathers, the fathers, whatever, and we knew that, hey, all of a sudden, and we had raised our hands in that room. I said, how many of you in this room at Carl's Golf Shop, I said, how many of you know the name Northwestern? Actually, 4 out of 7, so we had a majority.
Northwestern Golf, welcome back.
Mm-hmm.
And we're back spending some time with the president and CEO and co-founder of Northwestern Golf.
What?
Northwestern Golf. I may have heard of that. Well, if you haven't, you're starting to hear about it now because it's catching very quickly. And I'll tell you why it is. Because when Mike in the last segment was talking about staying in your lane, these guys found a lane that had been vacated, and now they're on the expressway to making big things happen. And the thing I appreciate about Northwestern, besides a true high-quality entry-level golf club, is they still use words like stainless steel, 431 stainless steel, highest-grade titanium driver. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, Mike has been in the industry for decades. He's a young guy, but decades, okay? So he knows, and he worked for Titleist, which is number one in ball and golf, and they make clubs too, but along the way. But when you look at the other side of this piece of paper, and it says Thunderbird drivers, $199.99. Okay, well, first of all, I probably should have saved this for the next segment, but I'm going to delve here. Because earlier this week, I got the new Golfdom spring catalog with the new year, new gear. And nowhere in there did I find a driver for $200, okay? And that even goes to the new Elite by Callaway, spelled E-L-Y for Elite, obviously. And it says 8 yards longer. 8 yards longer. But wait, next to it, it says up to. So never mind. But it says the Triple Diamond driver is that a six? $649.99, so $650. Okay, $654 driver. God bless you, Mr. Callaway. I know what you did. We talked about it on this show before. He was the first guy to say they will pay the $600 for a driver. But that's not where you are, Mike. So how can you use top quality materials and still come with a price point like that?
Another great question. I'll answer that by saying you start from scratch. You start with understanding who are the best potential partners for you to have. We picked Jeff Sheets' design team out of Austin, Texas, who's designed a lot of product over the year for major OEMs. He's got 550 patents. We knew he was the best independent, so we just picked Jeff and said, Jeff, here's where we want to go. We want to have a product that would retail for $200 on a driver. We want to be no more than $350 on a set of irons in steel, $399 in graphite for the ladies and seniors. We want fairways that are reasonably priced, but we want good technology. We know that you can do this, and we want to know how you would do it. So Jeff walked us through it. There's a geometry that we developed, that he developed, that moves CGs and does some nice things for us for our golfers. We do not offer anything as far as adjustability at this price point. Quite frankly, we've done some in-depth surveys that we find about 95% of the people don't understand how to adjust a driver. Most of the drivers that are fitted, that are adjusted, they give you a wrench, they don't ever touch it again, just put it away. Here's your setting. Most entry-level golfers will have no clue how to do this, and we don't need that at our entry level. So having said that, we can keep our price point down. So we don't have lots of whistles and bells, but we do have geometry when you see the club that makes sense, that we can force CGs back deep and low to get the ball flight up and get spin down. So we can do all that without having all the whistles and bells that an expensive driver has. I'm going to first of all tell you, we are not – we are a great driver. I'm just going to tell you, I've had a lot of guys hit the driver. People love the driver. We are not going to be on a PGA tour. We're not going to be on any of the tours that it's not that great of a driver. I mean, when I say great, I'm G-R-A-D-E, not that great of a player's driver. It's very good. It shocks people when they hit it, how good it is. And that's not an accident. It was designed by a great guy, Jeff Sheets, and his team. But we took it to China, and we said, hey, listen, we want to shop this. And we had seven different foundries bid on us. The Virage Tech Group was the one that really came at us aggressively. And they make the product primarily, the majority of product, for TaylorMade, Callaway, and Titleist. And they said, we want your product. We want to do it. We know what Northwestern was. We want to do it. And we were excited because that is the home of the best drivers. That's the home of the best metals. They just make the best. Everybody lines up with Ferrostech. So we weren't sure on the iron, but we knew they made a good iron. And so once we did the design and we got the iron in place and then we started doing the prototyping, it came back and we said, hey, listen, this is really good. So we just dialed it in, just so you understand, 431 castings with some special iterations to it that make it really perform well. And we just partnered well with a manufacturer and who said, we understand what Northwestern is.
We'll pick it up when we come back from this break with Mike Morgan. He's president and CEO of Northwestern. We'll be
the Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter. The Lama. Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
And I knew as we started the second half of the hour that I was going to get into a bag that I might take a while to burst out of. And that was talking about the quality of the product versus the price of the product. Now, anybody that's been in this industry for any length of time knows a lot about the smoke and mirrors. And this hour's guest is no different. Mike Morgan, president and CEO of Northwestern, who decided that, hey, you know, retirement was for me after my years and years with Titleist. I'm gonna get back and own part of golf company. So he knows about the golf industry, but he chose to do it anyway. But when you talk about bringing, yeah, you know what he's being.
I know exactly what you mean.
He's a little shy right now. It's like the great Barney Adams told me: if you want to play more golf, don't get involved with the golf industry. So I tell that story all the time because absolutely, it's so true. I told Rudy Slucker that when he bought Tommy Armour, but you know he didn't believe me. He didn't believe me either. And I don't know where Rudy is, but I know where Tommy Armour is no longer,
right,
from that standpoint. But you know, you have this experience, and you want to bring the top quality product to market because your name is on it somewhere. I mean, your name's on the door. I mean, I know Joe does a lot of heavy lifting in other parts of the company and stuff, but you know, your reputation in the industry is still there. So, from your standpoint, Mike, is that what you tell the guys at Titleist who are involved with them making clubs and anybody else that you know in the industry, which are a lot of people, that hey, we're over here in our lane. We sell this driver for considerably less than you do, but we're not the same animal. We're in the same zoo, and you're the white tiger. We're just the regular tiger, kind of gold with the stripes.
Right.
Is that what you tell them? Is that what you do?
Well, the first thing I explain to anyone who, especially like a Titleist, when they were asking me at the PGA show, and they kind of knew in advance some of the things we were doing, but I said, listen, you really, really want us to do well because we're going to hold these golfers, these new golfers coming in the game who look at the costs of OEM product and just say, listen, I'm just not sure I can pull the trigger at this level at this point in my early career in golf. So I think this Northwestern performs really well. I like it. It's great. I'm going to play that. We're just going to hold them there for a couple of years. And I told the president, David Kern at Titleist, I said, David, I mean, you want us to do really well because we're going to hold them in place for you, and then they're going to graduate to the OEM level. What you don't want to do is have new golfers coming in the game and look at the product and get sticker shock and walk away and just say, I just can't do this. And we want to be that game changer. We want to make money. We want to be profitable, but we also see the need in the marketplace. And it really is just being able to make a difference in the product pricing. Well, you asked a minute ago, why can we do it? Quite frankly, the reason is we do not have $85 million in PGA Tour contracts, advertising programs in place. I mean, we're going to do it through social media. We're going to do it through some cool YouTube things. Where most of the business has gone is that direction. PGA Tour is wonderful, and I love it. I've been a part of that over the years with Titleist, and I love it. But it's just not our business model, so we don't need to put $85 million into those kinds of contracts. We don't have 700 employees, you know, involved in our company worldwide. We're staying lean and mean, and that's what we want to do. And we want to deliver the best possible product. And we can do that by staying lean and mean and focusing on what we do best.
Well, it reminds me a lot of a company, a pretty small company outside of Chicagoland by the name of TorEdge. And David Glad did a phenomenal job. And those guys, they've spent some money on tours. But what they did is, you know, we can't afford the PGA Tour. But what about those name guys on the Champions Tour? Where everybody goes to the tour and says, oh, I know this guy, this guy, this guy. You know, they got longer to play some of their clubs and different guys and such. And
right.
it's been a good, successful formula for them. And it's interesting.
Absolutely.
The way it has kind of morphed. And that's what you're looking to do with the general public, because we've talked about that situation on this show numerous times over the years with different people as far as the growth of the game. How do we grow the game? Well, that's the multi-billion dollar question, right? Because
right.
if you actually had that magic pill, you would own about 10 islands and could live in on any of the ones that you wanted to, right? But the point
Absolutely.
Being, Mike, that is nobody has the answer to that. But the answer is a combination of answers. And one of them is the cost of playing golf. So let's take the equipment and set that to the side for a second, all right? It costs a round of golf is still ridiculously priced, and even on the public courses, it's overly priced, because while COVID was great and they spaced it out, I know some of the municipal courses said, you know, we had 5 minute tee times before. Let's expand it to 8. Oh, 8 minutes is great. You know, you get more in there. You know, it still gets to hit some bumps and stuff. It slows down a little bit. But then they said,
right.
oh, you know what? We're losing a little bit of revenue, so let's up that rate. So then again, cost
right.
the golfer more to play, even on the municipal courses. But besides the accessibility and that cost, the equipment has always been ridiculously priced. And as you mentioned this, and this is why I didn't have you on as a guest because I was so sentimental and think, oh, Northwestern, it's a great story. It's a great comeback story, especially if you can,
right.
you and Joe can really make this something big, big being relative, obviously, right? You don't have to be,
right.
you don't have to become one of the 800-pound gorillas in the industry.
Don't need to be a giant. Don't
right.
need to be a giant.
Exactly.
Yep.
But the point being there is you have addressed a problem, a major problem in the industry. Because again, going back to my new catalog, that Golfdom was so nice to send me, but I should say Worldwide Golf, because they own Golfdom and you know, all the Edwin Watts, and Edwin was on so long ago, and I miss him. But you know, all these companies that they end up buying so they can compete. It doesn't matter who you go to. Here is a Cobra driver for the ladies, the Air X, and that is $348.99. So
mm-hmm.
even for the ladies, there's almost $400 in investment. Oh, here's the ping. It's $498.99. So you know, so nobody's immune to this. You know,
correct.
I mean, unless you're really starting, if you're a junior or the young kids and you U.S. kids and you know get some of those clubs, they're less expensive, right? But still,
correct. And you make a great point. I mean, they're great products. I mean, there's nothing that I would say that doesn't validate they're really good products. It's just that it's a relative term. I mean, I can be good at 200 for a player who doesn't know the difference. I mean, they just come into the game and they go, I just need to make contact. I'd like to put some money into lessons. Now I can afford to take some lessons in addition to buying golf equipment, which really, when I would do some fittings over the years, a lot of times I might step away and say, listen, we're not consistent enough today to really get a good fitting for you. So why don't we take, instead of spending $500 on a driver in a nice way, I want you to think about a couple of lessons, maybe a lesson series, and let's do this again. I do it in the nicest way I can, but honestly, there's so many golfers in the 80 percenters that a $500 driver doesn't mean any more to them than a $200 driver. That's the point.
Well, Nuno, the other thing for me, and I know we're going to get a chance to play test some of your clubs, if I find it interesting, is I'm in my head, less apt to be concerned about smashing a $200 driver than I am a $400 driver. And I mean smashing against the ball, right? Swing it and you scuff the ground, or a chip of paint comes off and you're like, I just spent $600 on this driver and look, it's chipped now. Whoa. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You know, then you get that stress going, you know, the whole thing. So I think, you know, if you think about, hey, here's one that you can knock around a little bit more and no disrespect intended, you know, go out and have at it. You know, you kind of build confidence that way too.
Go have fun. You know, that's the main thing. Go have fun. Enjoy golf. Get on the golf course. If you want to play your music, you want to smoke cigars, whatever it is you want to do, go enjoy the game. As I've gotten older, I've realized the competitive side was a lot of fun. I enjoyed when I played, you know, what little competitive golf I played, but it's more about camaraderie and enjoying the game. And you know, if you're custom fitted to the golf clubs, that's even better. For the most part, you're dialed in a little bit better. But our level of golfer is just not looking for that. They're just looking for a good time, and they just want to go out and enjoy it. And the cost of goods to get into it is reasonable. Now I can go play where I want to play with some friends, have some drinks, and play golf in the evening, nine holes, whatever it is.
Yeah, and that's where the whole premise of the Drive Shack and Topgolf came in, because that's not golf. You're not going to play golf. Golf is a side element of the eating and the drinking. That's where the money's made for those companies anyway. So it's nice that, well, some people should not have golf clubs in their hands, period, but that's a different side story. But, you know, especially after here, hey, have a couple of beers, now swing the golf club. Woo! You know,
especially watching the Top Golf, some of those videos of people falling off the decks and all that stuff, which is crazy to watch. Those people should not be on a golf course.
Exactly. Yeah, they shouldn't have a golf club in their hand. However, that's a side element of a place like that, you know. So that's that's great, and get introduces people and such. And it's because it's a whole different animal, you know. So having been on both sides, right? I know you've done both too. When I go to Topgolf, I'm working on some shots a little bit. You know, it's target practice, right? When I'm on a golf course, it's a whole different level of things. I mean, it is more like a driving range, you know, from a Topgolf standpoint, but again, it doesn't translate to the big course for a lot of people.
No question. And I would say that the Topgolf type player isn't looking to get real serious in the game. They're looking to come into the game for fun, and they'll graduate to that. They'll say, hey, I'm going to take this more serious. I'm going to step up my level of involvement in the game. I'm going to take more lessons. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then there's room to graduate up to a more serious level when you get to a point where you want to join men's clubs and compete and do things like that. But for the most part, our golfer is just that golfer who just wants to get in the game and enjoy it and have fun.
Talking with Mike Morgan, president and CEO of Northwestern Golf. I have to say it. I brought my 3-wood here, and it's actually wood. Wood in, it's for stem, and it's got the screws in the bottom, you know, and it has the original shot, you know. I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I know. I always said it should go into the Northwestern Hall of Fame. Maybe actually, between Joe and Mike, they will create such an animal for those people who had those clubs for so long and hanging around and such. I'm leery to hit them, because they might actually still perform, but I'm also afraid that maybe something, you know, there's only the shaft, the grip, and the head, but you know, I don't need any of those flying around necessarily.
Right.
So we'll hold off on that. I'm not gonna swing this wood in the studio anyway. So for those who are playing along at home, you know, it doesn't work that way. But to the point of where you are from that, taking that persimmon wood that I'm looking at and looking at the 3-wood equivalent that I play today in today's game, no comparison. Now, you know, credit to Gary Adams for creating the metal wood, or the metal headed fairway wood that we know. We still call it wood, but that's been decades now since the metal woods have been out there. So it's a totally different animal, as we like to say.
Correct. Absolutely. You know, it's interesting because when we look at golf right now, it's a little bit of an opposite game when you look back and you say, we had pieces of furniture that we hit with, you know, as a driver or a fairway wood, and they were persimmon, or they were hardwoods, maple that was laminated and glued and all that. And you hit a hollow center golf ball that had a liquid in it. And today it's metals. It's bigger and it's hollow and it's got CORs, and the golf balls are solid. So it's a little bit of an opposite position of where we were, you know, 25, 35 years ago. And it's an interesting migration to where we are today, because it definitely has, the technology has been great. It's been fantastic, and it's great to see breakthroughs on AI with design and things like that. But we still have to get back to the basics, that we have people who want to get in the game of golf, but they don't understand any of that. I just want a good quality set of golf clubs for a good price. And that's, again, I just want to make my point that that's our niche. That's where we want to be. But I take nothing away from all the OEMs who do a great job and spend a lot of money on R&D. I know what it is. I understand it. I've been a part of it, and it's they work really hard at what they do to get a little bit of a niche, a little bit of an advantage, and good for them. But I will say this, and walking past some of the booths at the show, to Keith's point earlier, if I added up the 8-yard gain that XYZ company has, and then they had 7 last year and 6 the year before and 9 the year before and 12 the year before, added all that up, there's not a par 4 that you should not be able to drive, and there's not a par 5 you can't hit a middle iron into, based on the marketing that's out there right now. And I know for a fact that that's not possible. So it's a lot of marketing. It's a lot of good product, but there's not a huge difference between really good product and excellent product. I'm just going to tell you that.
Well, you know, I can see why Joe came to you, Mike, and said, I need you to head this for us, because you're a guy that has been around all those elements of what the industry is about, and it makes a big difference. But I revert back to a conversation I had a long time ago with an elderly gentleman. I guess he was about 75 years old. He says, "Hey, Keith, I hit my driver 150. I hit my 7-iron 150. I hit my putters 150, right?" So it's like, okay, look, so take a general par 4, 350 yards, you say, right? So how many 150-yard shots do you need? Well, you should be easily on the green in 3, right? And hopefully you didn't, overhit, right? That would be right. 450, right? You could even do, right. So even if you did a 450 hole, you could still be on the green with 150-yard shot 3 times, right? And then you're putting for par. Or in your case, the par would be a bogey, but even if you 2 putt, what's the deal? You know, and that's, you know, that's what it's about. It wasn't about the equipment per se that he was using. It was the results he was getting from the equipment that he was using, and he wasn't calculating, hey, I can actually get on the green. I can actually, you know, putt for a par on a regular basis.
Correct.
And if I don't get the par, then I get the bogey. And that's where I think it gets so overplayed. And Tiger Woods was great for the game. He was horrible for the game. And, you know, from the standpoint of everybody wanted to be like Tiger, everybody wanted to hit the big shots, everybody wants to blow it by you. It even affected the tour like that. All the tours, the guys wanted to do that. So it made a big difference. It wasn't always for the better. And we'll give you an update on Tiger when we come back from this. But we're going to wrap up the show with Mike Morgan, the president and CEO of Northwestern, after this break. We are back for our final segment with Mike Morgan, president and CEO of Northwestern Golf. Yes, and before we went to the break, I did tease, so to speak, Tiger Woods is done for 2025. Achilles injury has been repaired. The guy's, he's not going to be out playing golf. He's lucky he's alive and walking. The guy is unbelievable. I mean, to be around him, you always get the feeling that, there's power there. from a personal standpoint, and you need it. But, I mean, he's busted up. I mean, I'm never surprised when I hear another injury coming to him, and he doesn't hold back. He's been playing the TGL stuff, and it's just right. golf wrecks your body, you know. And I found it interesting what you said in the last segment too, Mike, about not being as competitive or playing as competitively. As I have a high school buddy who was always kind of that guy. He wasn't like an athlete, kind of competitive, but when you get him on the golf course, he's out there, he's trying to take your money. Let's play for a buck a hole or whatever. And I talked to him recently because he was doing the Florida swing for first part of the year, not for actually competitive reasons, but for vacationing reasons. And he said, I'm not playing like that anymore. I'm going to get together with a few of the guys, going out, enjoying myself, and just playing or knocking it around. And I never thought I would hear him say that. But he's like, you know, I'm a little older now. And I'm like, man, you've always been older. What the heck, you know? I don't know what you're talking about, you know? But to your point.
I think it comes, Keith, from you get to a realization that you just can't hit the shots like you used to hit them. And so you either get frustrated with it and you say, I used to hit that shot, I used to hit it this far. Or you just say, here's where I am, and I'm grateful to be out in the sunshine, or hopefully, you know, good weather, and you're out there and you're just enjoying the moment. And life is short, and if you could get out there and just enjoy it and not get frustrated, and that's where I got. I just got to the point where I don't have what I used to have, which was limited to begin with. So I made a decision a long time ago. I could either try to go play golf and not make any money, or I could go sell golf and maybe make some money and do something in life with golf, and that's what I did. But I think it's just a realization, Keith, that you get to a point where it's a point you can't do what you used to do. So let's enjoy what we have.
So is this going to be you already have kind of a legacy in the industry? Is this going to be a new legacy for you if and when this small golf company that can again?
Right. Thank you. My legacy is nothing really. I'm just blessed to have been able to be a part of something that I've always wanted to do, and I thank God every day I got to do it. And I want to the biggest thing for me and Joe is just leave something behind. Whether it's money for us, it's not that. We're financially fine. We don't. That's not our goal in life. It is to leave something back for history purposes that maybe could make a difference in the direction of golf in the future, and making a statement with and Sports Illustrated made a great point when they wrote an article with us down in Florida, and it was just that you guys are a bit of a disruptor brand. You know, it's almost like you're going to throw some monkey wrenches into this and realize that hey, golf equipment can be good, but you don't have to spend that much. And that's what we want to leave behind, is that we made a difference for a lot of people to understand that golf is great. We want you in the game. We just want it to be affordable.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable. I know you're working on website stuff and getting more information out to the general public. I've really enjoyed spending time with you on this show, and everybody I think has learned a lot. We obviously, you know, we like history, and we like Phoenix rising again, and we like you know, because I tell people all the time, and again, this just tells you how long I've been at this game, so to speak, and doing this show. We've had so many good products come across our desk over the years, golf balls and clubs and everything you could think of. And they're gone. Yeah. The companies are gone because they were mismanaged, or the company wasn't ready for the lightning in the bottle, or whatever the case may be. There's so many things, as you well know, people don't think about it because they're not that deep. You know, business and golf can be so simplistic to people. Like, you're in the golf industry, why wouldn't it be easy, right? No, you got to worry about components, and you got to worry about this, and you got to be worried about supply and demand, and it goes on and on and on. If you can't keep that going, then you are no longer around, and that's why companies like Titleist, you know, mean so much. Ooh. To me, they mean so much more than TaylorMade. You know, I mean, you know, it's hard to single them out because they started out with such a leadership of Gary Adams and Carson Solheim for Ping and down the line. So from that standpoint, but Northwestern, watch for them. But we're out of time. Get out there and practice your game. I tell you, Mike Morgan would want you to do with Northwestern clubs. But practice, take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.